Welcome, friends, to another episode of Little Bit Weebish, the podcast where I, Megan Cardenas, chat with my friends about the anime that I love, episode by episode. And it is the last episode, season finale of the first season of Jujutsu Kaisen with Sam Kemp. Sam, how are you feeling?
I am better than I have been the past week and a half.
Let's tell the people what you mean by that.
Oh, so I have been not COVID sick because I made sure to take that test ASAP, but some type of cold, and I like coughed up my lung and then couldn't talk for like 3 days. We postponed this for like 5 days.
Yeah.
Because I really didn't have a voice, and I'm the one that's like talking this episode. So
it would be a very one-sided conversation if we had done this any sooner.
It would be like one of those ASMR videos where you're just like, I'm just whispering this entire time. Like, that's all that I could do for the past 3 days. So I'm so happy that I actually have something to project into the microphone.
I know. You sound great compared to how you were, like, voxering me the other day, where you're like, I need you to hear how bad I sound. And I'm like, girl, I believe you. We can wait. But yay, we're finally doing this just, you know, a couple days shy of when we got to turn this around to everyone. So yay.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh, it cracks me up. Well, everyone, since we're just, you know, really, like, I guess, really doing this, like, quick turnaround, we actually have the results of the Itadori Toto Megan Sam Besto Friendo poll, you know, the Besto Friendoship poll. And I'm just going to tell everyone the results in case no one's on Instagram, you know, for those of people who didn't see. Can you guess what the end results were, Sam?
First off, I'm so mad. I've been watching our stories religiously. And then yesterday or whenever it was, I was like absent off of social media all day because I was very excited for this.
I love it. Oh my gosh. Well,
I have no clue.
You know, okay. I also want to tell people before I share the results that our first photo basically together was when Sam and I were 14 years old and we were on the last day, day number 4 of a 40-mile hike on the Appalachian Trail.
Yeah.
And so we were looking great. And on top of that, we were just extra dorky, but adorable, in my opinion, you know?
Yeah.
So
we were the ones that like brought, like, we were the caboose to the train of people. And I just remember like our leaders being like, oh, guys, you got to pick up the pace. We've got people like a half a mile ahead of you. And we're like, we're just talking and we're having fun. And they're like, yeah, but you need to move faster.
I know, but gosh, it was so much fun. I'm just so proud of like 14-year-old you and me because we're just so cute. And then 4 years later, when we turned 18, we were asked to come again, this time to hike 20 miles on the Appalachian Trail, because then we also had like a canoeing experience and all this stuff.
Which is so gross.
But yeah, basically, collectively, Sam and I have hiked 60 miles on that Appalachian Trail, and man, that is no joke. But now you know the context of why we look the way we look, you know, little kid version. But now, here we go. Here are the results. No more delaying. The people have spoken. 57% to 43%.
Okay, so close.
Yeah, very close, but there is a winner. Well, not a winner. One option is a winner. And that is that Megan, myself, is Itadori and Sam is Toto.
That's so great. Like, I mean, thank you.
It doesn't matter either way.
But I guess I am friends with a tall girl with a big ass. So there we go.
Oh my gosh, but yeah, it just cracked me up. And I'm just like, this was hysterical. It would have been hysterical either direction, but thinking about me being the Itadori and you being the Toto just cracks me up even more. So,
Well,
anyway.
I feel like Megan is just somebody who loves to do goodness for everybody and is just
Oh.
always happy and altruistic. So I feel like Itadori for Megan very much fits.
Oh, well, thank you, Sam. And also, I mean, I turn to you for a lot of advice and a lot of like being my sounding board and whatnot. And so you are just very much, you know, a like a not mentor or anything, but just a person who guides me through my thoughts, you know? So I actually think that that's pretty great.
Good.
So there you go,
My
everyone.
reasoning may not be as sound as other people's, but the end goal really helps.
Well, you
Well,
know
my
what?
ultimate point.
You know what? Neither was Toto's. We saw the daydream.
Exactly.
We saw the crazy backstory montage, but you know, the results were amazing. So, yeah. It's quirky. I loved it. But
This is
yeah.
so great. I've got to tell my husband.
I know, right? It's so good. But yeah, everyone, let's just dive right in. We are covering this episode, of course, the last three episodes of season one. We're going to kick off with episode 22, which is Sam's episode. So, Sam, take it away.
Okay, and my quick summary is we find four men have passed away after experiencing a weird phenomenon and being stabbed by a curse. Their connection is that they all went to the same middle school and is later found out that they did a test of courage by the Yasohachi Bridge. I tried to spell that as phonetically as possible.
Nice, I love it.
Megumi finds out that his sister did the same test of courage and he fears for her safety. He knows that he must take, oh, which by the way, Itadori and Nobara were like, you have a sister? Like,
I know, like, way to keep that under wraps.
yeah. He knows that he must take the curse out quickly to protect her, because she's in some type of a cursed coma. And he knows that she won't exhibit any of the other, I want to say like symptoms of the curse, like the other people
Right.
did. But also fears the level of curse that it is and lies to his friends, Yuji and Nobara, and tells them that they are off the case. So he's like, this could be like a really big curse. It sounds like it's pretty intense. I don't want my friends to suffer for this. I'm going to do this alone. So as Megumi makes his way alone underneath the bridge, Yuji and Nobara intersect him and explain that they should do this together. It was a very sweet moment. I just really want to
Yeah.
point that out. Like, it was, in my opinion, a turning point for Megumi with other people. He's a very solitary creature, and I feel like this moment was very a pinnacle moment for Megumi to realize that he doesn't need to do things alone. He's been with Gojo for a really long time, but it's not until he has Yuji and Nobara by his side that he realizes that you can depend and count on other people.
And it's such a contrast. Sorry to interrupt or
No, you're
whatever,
good.
but it made me think that this is the only other instance where the three of them are going out to take out a curse. The first time it was at the juvenile detention center, and we kind of saw the growing pains of how they worked together, how they trusted each other, how you know, how they operated working as a newly developed team of three. And then to see them in this second scenario where the stakes are just as high, it's just as scary, but the three of them work so much better together and they have so much more trust in their skills and in each other. So I was like, huh, this is a really nice way we are ending this first season, just seeing how far they've come, you know?
Yeah,
So.
a very contrasting moment. I love that you talk about that because I think that really is important. I think in one of these episodes I do reference that at some point,
Oh.
as part of my No, it's not a bad thing. I'm glad that somebody else was able to see that contrasting moment because, you know, it's how many episodes? This is 22 episodes in. Like, sometimes it's really, really hard to remember what's going on, and especially when they have so many fights, you know, in duos and by themselves and then in trios, and they go in and out with doing, you know, different missions with other people. And so it's really nice to see that somebody else feels this way. But the last part of the summary is they step across the river. And just remember this part. If you don't remember this part, go watch this last few minutes of the episode, because I think that it is actually really, really important to the story. So all three of them step across the bridge together at the same time and find the bridge's curse and an unexplained other curse that has made its way into the domain as well. So
good.
I really like that you talked about that previous, you know, excursion or mission, not excursion, mission. Because I really wanted to focus on how together they were this episode, or how together they become by the end of the episode. And so my theme today was the ties that bind. And my first question, that's just kind of an open-ended question, is it better to do things together or in secret or by yourself, separate from one another? Like, how has it been through their journey when they have done missions together? How has it been when they've done missions alone? And like you said, with the example, the first one that they did to all three of them actively fighting, it was like a catastrophe. I mean, Yuji ended up dying at the end of that. So that's kind of like the last thing that at least Megumi remembers, you know, Nobara being taken out and separated. She gets separated every single freaking time. It makes me so mad. It's like, let's take out the woman. Let's separate her by herself.
I know. Gosh.
And I feel like she has fallen by herself over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's like the last mission that Megumi remembers. He remembers Nobara being on death's door, you know, trying to take out a really high level curse by herself and ends up getting hurt really bad. Megumi ends up saving her. But also, Megumi ends up running and leaving Yuji by himself, with Yuji telling him to do that, of course. But he runs away. So this episode is about four boys who did a bonding event together. And I think that this is really important too, because it ends up costing their lives. So we also have that as an example at the beginning, that doing something together where you're counting on one another, you're just doing things for fun, ends up killing them. So we have this like looming over them of like, oh, just depend on myself, just do things by myself, like no peer pressure to do anything that might hurt myself. You know, like my actions and consequences are my own.
Mm-hmm.
And so all the other people who have done this event together, a test of courage, end up being in danger of dying too. So to me, this is just a warning about letting people get close to you and into your life.
Right.
Megumi, who has recently become close with Yuji and Nobara. He finds out that this mission is probably out of all of their leagues, because they've been putting young sorcerers in really hard missions, and especially with Yuji showing the strength that he has, and also being Sukuna's vessel, which is also another tick against him because everybody wants him dead for that, they're put in even more dangerous situations. And with Yuji being so powered up, it makes him seem on paper more capable to take out a bigger curse. Megumi sees the danger in this. He's like, I know that Yuji's amazing and he's great and he's really, really strong, but this is a really big danger. And I have these friends now that I really do care about, and I don't want to lose one other person. I have my sister who's in a coma. I have my dad who left me. All of these things. And he doesn't want... I think he's realizing that he cares.
Mm-hmm.
And he's realizing that with Nobara and Yuji, and he's realizing that, like, he should have cared more for his sister. We'll find that out in the upcoming episodes a little bit more, their relationship. But you have this contrast of, like, oh, I should have loved harder with her.
Mm-hmm.
I need to not take these two for granted, and I'm going to protect them. So he secretly wants to take on the curse alone to protect them, and also to save his sister, who could be having these same effects on her body.
And I talk about this a little bit more in my coverage, but I think it's wanting to save his friends and his sister, but I think also it's because Fushiguro doesn't seem to, like, he seems to value Yuji, Nobara, his sister, at a different level than he does himself. And I feel like that's why he thinks that this is probably too much for me, but I'd rather it just be me, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that that makes him justify wanting to go at it alone.
Mm-hmm.
But of course we know that Yuji and Nobara, they don't see it at all that way, and they rally to come to him. But yeah, I think that that also plays a factor in that decision for Fushiguro.
Oh, for sure. So he tells them that the mission is over, that they've done as much as they can. But Yuji and Nobara end up heading him off and realizing that he was going to come alone. They know that he wants to protect them, but they believe that they are better together than they are apart. So as they start traversing towards the cursed area and the curse, we get kind of this narration that happens. And I had never really paid attention to what she was saying before, but it was I don't remember her name either. It's the lead sorcerer that's been driving them around for this investigation. Right,
the assistant type gal.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she starts to talk about the importance of ritual in this narration, that they need to cross the river together. So they have to cross a river to get to, like, the cursed area, the domain. And she thinks that this is where, you know, just walking into the cursed area is not going to do it to be cursed.
Right.
Something special needs to happen to enact the curse, enact that area to make an imprint on the person in the area. And so she says, they need to cross the river from one side to the other together to activate the curse. And she says, this symbolism is meaningful in sorcery. And so I was like, okay, like, let me look this up. And I was like, crossing a river in sorcery, didn't find anything. But I looked up some similar things that popped up were, like, dream encyclopedias and dream interpretations. So,
ooh.
And it sounded like very, very similar to what she was trying to get about. So I looked up crossing a river. I do have an encyclopedia link to this for people to kind of look at, but, I tried to take just a few different things that it said, 'cause I feel like it very much resonated with what she was trying to say. So crossing a river in dreams, since I couldn't find sorcery, means to moving into a new phase.
Oh.
Encountering what we can't control. Unexpected possibilities. And a death of some kind.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And I think that, like, what this is trying to say within the episode is this is showing a change in Megumi or the group as a whole. I think that if we say in terms of, like, moving into a new phase, they are moving into a new phase of, like, depending on each other, relying on friendship, and really being able to work as a unit. Let's see, what was the next one? Encountering what they can't control. Like, they literally every mission, they are either underprepared. Or underprepared in the sense of, like, their physical abilities, or underprepared as in, like, Gojo just left out tons of details.
Yeah.
And I really, this is something that, like, especially in the movie that we're going to cover, I really started to resent Gojo for that. I'm like, you dick.
Well, it was actually true.
Really, really mad. Like, I love Gojo, don't get me wrong. But sometimes, like, the way that he goes about things is so chaotic that it's not helping anybody with the way that he does things. And so, like, they literally are going into something where they don't know the bounds of what they're going to experience. They know that it's going to be dangerous. They know it's going to be a really big test. And then unexpected possibilities kind of comes into that. Like, they don't know if they're all going to come out alive. They don't know if they're going to actually save the people that are under this curse, but they're going in there as they are and with what they can. And then a death of some kind. I think that this is, in my opinion, a death to the old ways of how they all acted.
I was going to say that exact same thing, especially because we know what's going to happen with Fushiguro, especially. It's like a death of their old selves.
Yeah.
Especially him.
And, especially him. But if you look at it, Nobara and Yuji also kind of take a turn in the next couple episodes as well. It's a little bit softer. It's a little bit less noticed because Megumi's is pretty big. Like, it's a pretty stark difference. I think that the symbolism that the assistant was trying to convey was just really important. And I wanted to make sure that people, like, understand that there is symbolism in things. I mean, we've shared TikToks before of, like, Jujutsu Kaisen has some true stories that they've pulled into it. Well, true stories or, like, legends, I guess. Like, real-world legends, I guess I should say, or true stories. I don't know. However you want to look at that. But I think that, you know, they do a lot of things with intention within Jujutsu Kaisen so that you can see the meaningfulness of the action.
I agree.
I also think that Megumi also is trying to act on his own to save his sister. He is burdened and also uplifted by that relationship. But it also makes him hesitate to bring his friends to understand him more because he is afraid of what bad things might bring to them. Or what he might bring to the table as well. And so that's just kind of how I wanted to wrap it up of, like, we're going to see this big change here. Like this is the beginning, but just remember, I think that this is the reason that he's thinking and the reason why he has resisted so long. So even though that really didn't have to do much with, like, the crossing of the river, this is just me reminding you the reasons why Megumi is the way that he is.
I love it. I think that it's great. And yeah, I think when people reflect on the next two episodes that we cover, that they will see it echo back to the ties that bind, doing things together, and how much stronger they've become when they choose to work together. So I think this will just be a soft echo throughout the next two episodes we cover.
For sure. No, definitely. Let's just move on to the bonus really quick before we move on to the next episode. What were things that you liked or wanted to know?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, basically just going back to Fushiguro's roots, because this was the middle school that he went to. And it was so funny when Nobara saw the two loser middle school kids, and she's like, hey, check out those two punks. How about we kick their asses? I'm like, oh my gosh. And Trinidad, like, saw in the background, and he was like, oh my gosh, that is so you. Just, like, acting tough and being like, we can take them. But yeah, basically Trinidad was like, that is so you. But then it's like, those students, they see Fushiguro and they're just like, holy crap, oh my gosh, it's Fushiguro, I'm freaking out. It's like he's got this, like, legendary presence and that precedes him. But of course, Nobara and Itadori at first think it's them, which is just hysterical. Huh. And I guess the last thing is when the staff member remembers the boys and whatnot, who died. You know, he's just like, they were all problem children too, though not as bad as you. And I'm just like, who's Fushiguro? Like, I want to know the full, in-depth backstory to Fushiguro. Of course, the manga readers are probably like, I already know this.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'll have to get into the manga after we wrap this up. Because, yeah, I am dying to know. So, what about you, Sam? So what did you love?
I was just going to say, I love just seeing our trio come back together. Like, this is the this is the first activity with all three of them together. I say activity, I mean mission. This is the first mission that they've all had with the three of them together again since the last one when Yuji died. And I was just like, oh, this is so great. It's awesome. I love it. But also I feel like the way that that teacher was reacting to Megumi, I feel very similar to that.
Really?
Yeah. I wasn't like a really big fighter back in Ohio, but I was very snarky. I always turned in my homework. Like, I was a good student on paper.
Uh-huh.
I was just like, I was real snarky and like, I was too smart for my own good in the area that I lived in, right? When I moved to Virginia, I was like, whoa, I am so average.
But, oh my gosh, me too. Me too. Yeah. The exact same thing, but continue.
But it was one of those things where, like, gifted kid acts out because they just don't have enough to deal with. Like, I was grading papers because I knew what was going on in school and stuff like that. But I was also just very snarky, very much back-talked teachers that were new.
What?
And made fun of one teacher in particular, and the way that I made fun of him was not very nice. And I realized, like, what a punk that my friends and I were because of that. Because he was probably like 25, and I was like, you're so old and living with your mom? And I'm like, there are a lot of people that live with their mom into their 30s. So this guy was still pretty, like, on track and doing okay. Anyway, I resonate with that. And I just remember going back at one point, and I did go visit my school while school was in session because I was that cocky.
Oh,
I was like,
man,
you're gonna let me go to class with everybody else. And I did. I went to class and like hung out with my friends during class, totally disrupting everybody. And now I'm like, oh man, I'm such an idiot. Like, I was just a dummy.
Oh my gosh, that is hysterical. Yeah. I wasn't snarky, but yeah, that's just hilarious. Also, I feel like it's a rite of passage that every person comes back to their high school or their middle school. It's just like, oh yeah, I'm back. Hi,
I got it.
How are you? Hey. I feel like everyone does that. And if they say they didn't, they're lying. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, definitely. Well, I think that that's the end of the episode. Do you want to move on?
Yes, let's do it. Let's go on to episode 23. The title is The Origin of Blind Obedience 2. So we are just oozing with creativity on these titles. And it wouldn't be a Megan episode without like five paragraphs, so I'm just gonna like try to skim. I'm gonna skim my own summary to make it a true summary, maybe. But basically, beneath the fighting bridge, Itadori, Fushiguro, and Nobara, they are just ready to fight these curses. It is epic and badass. And, you know, compared to the fight with Hanami, this seems relatively easy to the point where one of the curses is like, you're too strong. This is no fun. And Fushiguro and Nobara, they're doing this like whack-a-mole thing. And then suddenly Nobara gets separated by the group. So
of course,
of course, you know, and so Fushiguro, but okay, Nobara is pretty awesome because she's like, I'll be fine. You just whack the mole. And she points to him as she's getting dragged in. And I'm like,
yeah,
hell yeah. Way to go.
Like, she just has this random hand just pulling her backwards in this like goopy miasmic mess of a hole.
Yes. Exactly.
Who is cool as a cucumber being pulled backward into like this gelatinous grossness?
Yeah. And she's like, I'll be fine. You know? And I'm like, gosh, cool girl energy. Straight up, you know? Yeah. But basically, let's do Fushiguro, wrap him up real quick. Basically, he whacks all the moles, and then it's like from the roof, this gross pimple-like stalactite plops a disgusting curse that is identical to the one at the juvenile detention center. And this one is a few degrees stronger than the previous one, so you can imagine what they're up against if you remember that at all. And so we get this flashback of Gojo beating Fushiguro, who's asking for more training. And Gojo basically is like, look, you have the strength, the talent, potential to catch up to Itadori, but your problem is mindset. And with those flashbacks plus Sukuna, Fushiguro releases Domain Expansion Chimera Shadow Garden. It's epic and cool. The cursed spirit is scared and ends up dying. It's awesome. And the domain lifts and Fushiguro finds Sukuna's finger and then falls asleep because he's so exhausted. Where Nobara is, this weird creature who pulled her in is just this weird looking buff man. And he tells her that killing Jujutsu sorcerers isn't part of their certain errand that they have to do. Mm-hmm. So she can withdraw and he'll let her escape.
Because she's a woman.
I know. Oh, I know.
A beautiful woman.
I know. And it's like, I'm just so buff and so blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
He was creepy. Like, and it raises questions like, what errand? Who is this guy? Is he a cursed spirit or a user? And what is that smell? Which I'm like, not knowing where smells originate, gross. You know? So I'm right there with Nobara. And basically, their objective is to get Sukuna's finger and return it to where it belongs. Now, right as they're like, gonna maybe go at it, Itadori pops out and the two of them decide to take on this crazy cursed ugly dude and then the blue figure that's like, you're too strong. It's two against two. It's awesome. And yeah, they're gonna have a face-off. And yeah, that is my summary of my summary. And I think I did okay.
These last few episodes are just so freaking good. Like,
I know. Oh, and I did fail to mention, okay, here's an addendum to my summary, that a little more about Fushiguro. He beats up bullies. He hates bad people, but he also hates good people. And yes, years ago, his dad abandoned him and left with his sister's mom. So
they're not actually siblings. They're like step siblings.
Right. They're step siblings or just like bonded through the trauma of having their parents leave. Like, who knows? But they claim each other as siblings. And also, Gojo had come to visit him and said, hey, you were to be sold to your dad's clan, the Zenin clan, which big middle finger to them.
Mm-hmm.
But I stopped that. So it's all good. You're going to go to Jujutsu High. It's going to be great.
Mm-hmm.
And there you go. They go way back, Fushiguro and Gojo. So,
yeah. So I just wanted to clarify, the sister went with Megumi as well.
Did she?
Right? I mean, who is she living with?
Maybe
the manga people. No, but like, well, for some reason I was thinking like, okay, so did Gojo also save the sister as well?
I don't think so, because
like, I know that she's not part of the Zenin clan, but it's kind of like they were together, you know, brother and sister wise. Like, did she just go with him?
I don't think so, because I don't think that she would be a curse, like, be able to see curses.
Yeah.
Granted, Maki can't see curses, but she's a different thing. But I don't think she can see curses. Plus, she's currently in a coma, so she's probably in a hospital. I don't think she ever went to Jujutsu High.
I didn't mean, like, going to Jujutsu High. I just meant, like, going with Gojo, meaning, like, living with them. Yeah. But maybe not necessarily going to JJK Academy or whatever.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think that maybe they just, like, got separated. Kind of like, you're going to a boarding school and your other sibling goes elsewhere. I don't know. But that's just what I think.
Maybe we'll figure out if she wakes up.
Yeah. And, of course, manga readers are screaming at us. Like, we know the answer. And it's like, okay, sorry. We don't know the answer. So, anyway. But let's dive in to the theme. How do you bring out your best self? And this is a quote that Gojo had essentially asked Fushiguro. Now, I feel like I don't give Gojo enough credit. I feel like sometimes, well, I don't know. But I feel like I personally don't give him enough credit. But there is Fushiguro's flashback that kind of proves that his unorthodox method of baseball was amazing, and he can also be very real and teach his students in the way that they need to hear the lesson. Mm. Granted, like you said before, sometimes he also chooses to not share. So, you know, it's a double-edged sword with his methods. But yeah, so specifically, what Gojo had witnessed with baseball is that he saw that Fushiguro was willing to give a sacrifice bunt to advance the runner, his teammate, whereas Itadori would always go for a home run. Same thing that Gojo would do if he was playing. And it's good team play, but not when it comes to Jujutsu sorcery. Mm-hmm. And because the mindset of baseball is it's a team sport, but with Jujutsu sorcery, it's an individual sport. You're going to work together, but also be by yourself for the most part. And there's this back and forth dialogue that I find to be so perfect. So I'm going to give the quotes that tie into the how do we be our best selves. So first, Gojo told Fushiguro, "I think you have just as much ability and potential as Yuji does. The only thing holding you back is your mindset. Megumi, you don't know how to bring out your best, do you?" Fushiguro gets mad and says, "Are you saying I haven't been giving my best?" And Gojo says, "I'm not saying you haven't. I'm just saying you can't." Which sounds harsh, but I think what he meant is that Fushiguro cannot progress and go beyond where he is right now until he addresses the mindset. The mindset is his biggest obstacle. And then in another quote, he says, "You can only piece together undervalued data on yourself and others. You can't imagine a stronger future version of yourself. Maybe that's because of your trump card. You believe that in the worst case, you can resolve anything at the cost of your life. But at that point, forget beating me. You'll never even measure up to Nanami." Which sounds like a dig, but it's Gojo. So, you know. But okay, when you think about something, like what it means to undervalue something, it means that the price or the importance of something is actually lower than the true intrinsic value. So what Gojo is saying, Fushiguro struggles to see the true intrinsic value of himself and of others. His viewpoint or mindset makes him see himself and those around him lower than what they actually are. So we can easily tie this to his scale that determines who is worth saving and who isn't, you know, but I won't go there, but we can see the tie that connects those two. And then Gojo says, you can't imagine a stronger version of yourself. Again, it's his mindset that is blocking him. He sees how much stronger Yuji got. He wants to get to that level too, but he just doesn't envision how to get to that point. What it's going to take for him to actually be as strong as Itadori. And then he has this trump card. You know, Fushiguro values himself less than what his real value is. He can't imagine his stronger version of himself because he'd rather give a sacrificial bunt at the cost of a home run. So he has this trump card, the sacrificial bunt, so to speak, that he would rather give if things got really bad to help other people live or move forward or whatever. And so it's because of that, he doesn't view his life, you know, that great or that of high regard. So he believes that a sacrificial bunt or the trump card is his best thing that he can give. And so it's with this mindset that Gojo tells Fushiguro, you cannot beat him, meaning Gojo. You cannot beat him. You cannot surpass Yuji. You can't even beat Nanami until you address the mindset that is holding you back. So it makes me, bringing it back to the theme, how do you bring out your best self? How do we as people outside of Jujutsu Kaisen bring out our best selves? Is there something in our mindset that's holding us back? How do we address those mental barriers and make them change or improve our circumstance? Are there things that we can change or step away from or bring into our lives that will help our mindset?
So to me, like, what I keep hearing is something that you and I have actually talked about recently, and it's imposter syndrome. And like, I want to say that I am not perfect at this. There are many, I've realized that there are many avenues in my life where I can and do have imposter syndrome. Like with being a mom, like, or being an adult in general, like, you're just winging it. You're pretending to be a mom. You're pretending to be an adult. And I haven't really tackled this imposter syndrome feeling. Imposter syndrome means that you are play acting what you actually are, just kind of like faking it until you make it, right? And so those areas I really haven't been able to address in my own life completely to be able to shed knowledge on that. But I feel like recently, between the conversations that you and I have had and then conversations that I've had with my bosses and with my husband, I feel like I've been able to see the ceiling that I have put myself in my career. That was, for me, moving from a regular salary job and moving into the contractor space when I became pregnant. With my first kid, I was like, I need to find something that I can still do while being a stay-at-home mom and still making money, maybe not to the same level, but still keeping up with trending experience within accounting, bookkeeping, and stuff like that. And being able to exercise like my skill muscles with accounting until I can get back into the normal space of, you know, a salary job. Do I think that I will go back to a salary job now? I don't know. because the contractor space for me has really been very eye-opening into my skill set and what I can provide. So for a lot of people, if you don't know, like I do bookkeeping and then like some, what do you call it? Controller level accounting. That being said, like my job varies very much. And depending on the job, I might also do admin work as well or HR work. But I have one boss in particular that I've been working for a while now. And he has just been really great for this imposter mindset thing of like, have you done this before? And I'm like, I don't think so. Or I did this like 5 years ago for one job. And he's like, well, you're good. Like you're smart. I will just teach you. And he's like, I know that you have the work ethic to do it. So teaching you is what I want to do. Like you have the ambition to work hard. And I know that you have the mindset to be able to grasp it. Will I have to train you multiple times until you get the concepts and get why you're doing things? Yeah. But like, I think that that's worth an investment. And I think that that's kind of what Gojo is doing here. Like he sees the potential and is trying to convey that to Megumi. And sometimes I feel like that's where like you break the ceiling for yourself is when somebody else tries to explain to you the value that you hold to them. And I think that that's what Gojo is doing. I think that that's what my boss has done for me. And for me, that has been something that has held me back because I don't see the value of my work ethic. Yes, I might not have education in accounting because my education was in psychology instead. Mm-hmm. But I have the potential to learn something new and to run with it and do a really good job with it, or at least ask questions to be able to do a good job with it. And I think that that sometimes is what really helps is when you have somebody else that tells you what value you bring and what potential that you bring so that you realize how amazing that you are. Sometimes there are things that you do in life that you don't realize have value. Like with Megan, we had been talking recently just about like her abilities. And she was trying to put something together in terms of a portfolio. And I was like, Megan, I don't think you realize, like, I know that Little Bit Weebish is kind of a niche subject and only certain people are going to like it. And some people might think it's silly, but you have to look at the effort that you have put in. The concepts or the marketing guru stuff that you had to put into making us have some type of a following. Like there is a skill to that. And that's something that's amazing. That's worth marketing. And it's one of those things where it's just like, sometimes you need somebody to talk with it through you to show you the value of the things that you actually do. And that applies in many different ways. Like my husband, you know, I get down on myself about being a mom. And sometimes I get down for myself for not going and having a salary. My husband's like, do you know how much money we would be spending on childcare alone? Like we had to have you do that, like you would be going out into the world at this point and we would pretty much be putting 3/4 of your paycheck into childcare. Like what you are doing now is making us money and saving us money at this point, or being a mom in general. And he's like, hey, you got two little boys. Like, chill out. We just both need to chill out. Yeah, we yell at our kids, John. But you're not perfect. it's just like those types of insightful conversations. Like you don't realize the good that you can do. And sometimes like if you just have something good to say, just do it. And I think that that's, long story short, Gojo is doing that. Gojo is doing that. And he's actually being a good person in this moment, even though he sounds like he's giving tough love.
Well, some again, though, I think it goes back to giving the lesson in a way that they need to hear it. So for Fushiguro, he needed to hear it a little more bluntly. And sometimes we need a sounding board or a mentor or a really good boss or a friend or, you know, a spouse or partner who can sort of shed light in a way that you understand or in the way that you need it.
Exactly.
And yes, I think the way you said how you, you know, helped me with my marketing and portfolio needs, I'm like, yeah, this would make Sam very much a Toto in this situation for me. Little Itadori being like, what are your thoughts? Tell me what you think. So, yeah.
You just need a hype person every once in a while. And I don't get to be that for other people very often because a lot of people are that for me. Like, you have hyped me so much on so many different things. I'm like, Megan, I'm really frustrated about this. And she's like, you can do it by yourself. Start that Instagram. Be an influencer in the book space. And I'm like, but I can't.
It goes back to that imposter syndrome. But you know what? Yes. Baby steps. We'll get there. And, exactly. You know, I'll be your hype woman all over again.
Yes.
But yeah, but basically it goes back to this mindset. So like, according to Gojo, which I feel like we can apply to whatever thing that we are struggling with. Well, maybe not everything, take it with a grain of salt. But like, according to Gojo, bringing out your best is just as much a mental battle as it is physical. Yeah. Fushiguro cannot physically out-train his mind. Mm-hmm. So what are we going to do on our end to bring out our best? And mm-hmm. what are the mental blocks or barriers that we need to address to help us do that, you know? So
very good. I love it.
Yay. I love it too. And Sam, you just brought so many real world examples. Yes. Love it. Let's go. So yeah, let's move on to our bonus stuff on what we liked. Sam, do you want to start us off with this little section first?
Okay, so did you watch the short at the end of the episode?
Oh my gosh, I always skip these. I did not. Tell me.
Hey, you have to go watch it. Now, let me give you some background. So my husband like will pop in every once in a while, and he loves Jujutsu Kaisen, but he also doesn't like how much I have to pause to like write my notes and stuff like that.
Same with my husband, yes.
Yeah. So he watched the episode 24 and 23 with me, and this was on the first day when I sent you a Voxer, and I was like, I have no voice, right?
Yeah.
So just keep that in mind. I couldn't talk very well, and I also couldn't laugh. So just keep that in mind. But the short at the end of the episode, which, regardless of me telling everybody this, you still have to go and watch it because it is unbelievably hilarious. Okay, so we start out with Nobara and Gojo just sitting under a tree because it's so hot out, and they're both just like eyes closed, slumped, sweating. And you hear, Fushiguro's getting hit on. And then you see Yuji like slide in front of them, and Nobara's like, it's too hot of a day for your antics. And he's like, no, Fushiguro is getting hit on by a woman. And then both Nobara and Gojo hop up and they say, Formation B. And they kind of do like that Naruto run. We have like the blurred background. Then we see Fushiguro talking to a woman. Nobara and Yuji run up to him and cling to him and say, how can you do this? How can you talk to this woman? Wasn't our one night enough? And enough for you? And Yuji said, you told me that it was the best night of your life. Are you kidding me? And then all of a sudden, we see the glittered background pop up. And we see that Gojo, it was so fast that he changed out of his Jujutsu Sorcerer uniform and is in his white shirt, black pants, and he's got his suit coat thrown over his shoulder. And he has his little black spectacles on. And he's like, Fushiguro. Oh, he says, stop it, you homewreckers. And he says, Fushiguro, why don't we go home together? Oh, he's like, as your violin teacher or something like that. Let's go home and learn Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star together. And it was just like, so funny. And then Megumi just has like this deadpan face. He turns to the woman and he's like, so that's how you're going to be able to get to the bus station. And the woman goes, okay, and walks away. Megumi says, what the hell are you guys doing? And Gojo just leans into it and he's like, what are you talking about? And just like continues the bit way longer than he should have.
And oh, it's my gosh.
Hilarious. Like, it's Gojo spectacular, where you just see like the sparkling background. It's like any woman who is, or any person who is into Gojo, like this is the moment where they show him as like the suave, really good looking Gojo.
Yes.
That like all the fandom art is about. It's that. It's there.
Oh my gosh, that is so good. Oh,
please,
okay.
Please go watch it. Okay, so the part where I was talking about where I couldn't talk, I'm sitting there wheezing in the corner. My husband also has football on his tablet, and he's like, what is going on? I said, you didn't watch that. Like, trying to yell at him. You didn't watch that in my squeaky voice. And I'm like making these high-pitched squeak sounds in between my laughter and gasping breath.
No!
My husband makes fun of me for that. He goes, hee hee, like this donkey sound. And
John!
I'm like, thanks a lot. I enjoyed this short. I'm going to live it. It's great. No matter what you do to make fun of me, it will not do a damn thing.
Oh my gosh. John Wood. That is hysterical. Okay, well, I'm going to have to watch that, clearly.
Yeah.
For me, I really liked how basically we just got this really clear version of Fushiguro. Like, this is how he's always been with good people, bad people, just like beating up the bad guys. And he's just like, you guys act like you're just so powerful. It makes me mad. If you do it another time, I'm going to kill you. And they're just like, but what did we do to you? And he's just like, figure it out yourself or die. Like, such a angsty little punk. And, you know.
Kind of reminds me almost of Batman.
Yeah.
Like, if Batman was a Jujutsu sorcerer, it would be Megumi.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. Like, this vigilante justice warrior on his own spectrum of justice, you know.
Exactly.
But, oh my gosh, that was actually perfect. But yeah, Sam, I think we're ready for episode 24.
So this is going to be a long episode because I have apparently been devoid of conversation for a very long time for the past week.
I love it.
Okay, so episode 24, it's called Accomplices, and here is our summary. Nobara and Yuji continue to fight the cursed fetus brothers, which I'm not going to go into the explanation as to that.
No.
You just need to watch the episode and like really pay attention to when they're talking about that,
because
it's just weird.
If they watched it, they'll know, and they'll be creeped out equally as much as me. So,
exactly.
Yeah. We don't need to get into it.
Yeah, so I'm just going to call them the fetus brothers or the brothers. While Megumi is down for the count after taking care of the special grade with Sukuna's finger, both brothers curse Yuji and Nobara. So one kind of gives, like, if you're into D&D, one of them gives poison damage and one of them gives necrotic damage. It's just
gross.
A different type of damage. One eats you from the inside out and one quickly kill you, I guess, as well. Because of this, Nobara is able to use her straw doll technique on them and wound them gravely. And we can kind of go into that a little bit later as to why she can do that. Yuji is immune to poisons because of Sukuna. So he's still able to fight the brothers physically. He's still able to move, like the poison was supposed to paralyze him. Nobara and Yuji team up to utilize their talents to take out both brothers and kill them. When their bodies don't disappear, they realize that they actually have physical bodies and that they didn't just exercise kill them, but they like killed them. Like if you were to kill another person, like they actually have physical bodies.
Yeah.
And Yuji and Nobara kind of talk about that at the end of the episode. Like, how do you feel about not just exercising a curse, but you actually just killed a curse?
Yeah.
And as they get back to Megumi, Sukuna's finger is handed off to Yuji with a promise that he won't eat it. Just as they hand it off, Sukuna pops a mouth open on Yuji's palm, the palm that is grabbing Sukuna's finger, and eats the finger. Megumi's like, "You promised you wouldn't." He's like, "Like I was gonna expect a hand to pop or a mouth to pop up on my palm that's grabbing the finger. Come on."
So funny.
But then this is kind of, you know, just I think that this is heading, this is trying to set up the second season with this part. But Gojo calls Utahime to catch up on events that have happened since the sister school event. They are still looking for the informant or like the rat.
Yeah.
Gojo hopes that it isn't one of the students and hopes that Mei can help weed out some information by paying her to help. So he's kind of like using Mei as a last resort. Like, we're just going to pay Mei and see what she can come up with.
Yeah.
Then we also see Toto and Mei.
Yeah, Mei.
We also go to see Toto and Mei go to the Kyoto principal to recommend Megumi, Yuji, Nobara, Panda, and Maki to advance in their levels as sorcerers.
Okay, two things.
Okay.
One, I am living for this Gojo Utahime phone call, probably more than I should, because I just love the idea of them. So there's that. Because I love, you know, serious and goofy, you know, storm cloud sunshine. Like, I love that little duo. But yeah, also, so there's that. Second thing, who do you think the informant is? Because
no, and it's killing me.
It's killing me because here's the thing. I'm like, okay, who would gain anything from teaming up with these cursed sorcerers? For me, I'm like, I don't see it being Panda. I don't see it being Maki. I don't see it being Toge or Nobara. Well, I don't see it being any of them. But I could see it being from the other school. And if that's the case, I'm like, it makes me think, who would gain from that? And, oh, I don't know. Could it be Miwa? Because she's desperate for money. She's so nice. But could it be Miwa?
It'd be Momo.
I know. And well, Miwa, she also had the trip to the campus before everyone.
Yeah.
You know, but then at the same time, I'm like, but neither of them go to that school. And their schools wouldn't be set up security-wise the same way. So it has to be maybe someone who we trust and love. I don't know.
Okay, so this is my worry, and this is the first thing that I thought of. I worry that it is Toge. I love Toge. Like, he has been one of my favorites. He was probably one of my first favorites, to be perfectly honest.
Wow.
Like,
I really want to get this
tattoo of like his little
like mouth tattoo.
Yeah,
thingies. Yes.
Yeah. Not on my mouth or on my face.
yeah, right. Placement is everything. For him, it's cool.
Yeah. Because, like, my husband and I were talking about it, and he's like, so can he not write down what he's trying to say? Like, can he not communicate through written word? Because, like, it's a speech thing, right? Like,
right.
What speech are the limitations? User. And I feel like Toge is one of the people that we know least about his powers and his limitations. Like, we know that he uses really big bursts.
But yes.
I worry because I love him so much. Like, I really think that he's just a cool, powered character. But I worry that it's him.
Well, now I'm thinking about how he fought with Hanami and how Hanami attacked Toge in different ways. I'm trying to feel like, oh shoot,
I'm worried
because it would not be Maki. Maki's got her own agenda. I do not think it would be her. Panda is a creation from Principal Yagi, so I think that crosses him out. Fushiguro.
But what if it is Principal Yaga and he's just using Panda as a tool?
Oh my gosh. There's also, okay. Ah, dang it.
I mean, I in my view, I don't feel like Yaga is against Gojo's. I just think that he thinks that Gojo is a little extreme in his tactics.
But would it equip? But would it equal attacking the students and and having them take cursed objects? I don't think so. I don't know if it would be that.
I don't know.
I think it has to be a student where they either don't know the full gravity of like what that means for them taking the cursed objects, or it has to be a very sinister adult who's playing people. But yeah. If it's a student who's, oh my gosh.
Maybe what if it's the open assistant? This up
on Instagram. Yeah.
What if the dark-haired assistant?
Oh my gosh, too many possibilities. You know what? This is what we'll do. We will open it up on Instagram to say Gojo is paying Mei Mei to see who the informant is. He hopes it's not a student. But who do you think was the informant that allowed them to invade the sister school event?
No manga spoilers, though. No manga spoilers.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. We are obviously opposed to manga spoilers.
I do want to read the manga, but we're going off of anime timeline.
Right, and we're also just too busy. Let's be honest. We have many things to read, so.
Yes.
Oh, man, but I'm so curious. That would be so good. Anyway, sorry. I derailed us from our theme, but I just have to get those two things out there.
It's all good. We'll just kind of speed through that. Well, when I say speed, this is where I get really long-winded, is in the themes, not in the not in the summaries. But my theme today is I couldn't think of anything. Like, literally couldn't think of anything that they had said or, you know, with, like, the actual with the fighting. Actual name of the episode. And so I was just like, plus ultra. I'm assuming a lot of people know what plus ultra is, but it's just from My Hero Academia, where they go above and beyond and push through their powers limits or like are extra buff. I thought it would work, and I thought it was very applicable.
I think it's hilarious imagining what a crossover would be. Like, can you imagine Nobara and Bakugo having it out with each other? It would be so loud.
It would be terrible. But what would he call her? Like, because he has nicknames for everybody. Like, I want to know what he would call her.
Probably something with, like, stabby nails and
stabby girl.
Yeah, or
the girl who plays with dolls. Like, he would be condescending.
Yeah, straw doll girl or something. Yeah. Oh, this is also a really great crossover, thinking about an idea. Like, who would be friends? Who would be fighting with each other?
Yes.
Anyway, I'm digressing really bad, so
lots continue. Of good social media polls coming up, it sounds like.
Absolutely. The mind is reeling right now.
Yeah. So I just wanted to call back to last episode where, with Megan talking about Megumi's conversation with Gojo, where Gojo tells him that he needs to move beyond what he thinks he's able to do. When he has done all that, he can push further. That's essentially what he's saying. When you feel like you have hit a wall, push further. Keep moving. And when he thinks he can't do something, like the innate domain, because we see him do an innate domain, try it anyway. Grasp for what is beyond your hopes. And in this episode, I feel like we have a great contrast between the brothers and Yuji and Nobara in the confines of what they think that they can do. So we see, like, last episode, one thing that I wanted to mention about, like, Megumi pushing past his limits is that you hear his inner dialogue, where he's like, oh, I just did an innate domain. It's not closed. It's not perfect. It's very much incomplete, but I did it. Yeah. And so he's realizing that just because, like, he can't do it perfectly doesn't mean he can't do it or that he shouldn't do it. Like, this is how you get better, is by trying, right?
I need to take a note from that. I feel like my perfectionism prevents me from doing a lot of things. And I'm just like, it does not, no one expects you to be perfect on the first try, the second try, the third try. You just have to try. And then eventually it gets perfect. Well, not even perfect, but eventually it gets better. But I need to take a personal note from that, you know, because I get in my own way a lot.
Oh, me too. Don't. Yeah. We could talk about that all day. But I think that like something that is not talked about as much. So we've talked a lot about like the expectations that Sukuna has on Megumi and like what is that going to look like? What can he see that we can't? What is Megumi not doing that he could be doing? And so we have like this going beyond. But there's much more of a subtlety, in my opinion, where we also see Yuji and Nobara do the exact same thing.
Yes.
And then we can contrast it with the way that the Fetus Brothers. I feel like I'm saying Fetus Brothers like the Blues Brothers or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, like it's a band.
Yes. But I think that there's like some things that we can look at here to see people who go above and beyond. And then we can see where people act within the confines of their expectations or the confines between the confines that they have based on their own power or itinerary, even with the Fetus Brothers. But both of the brothers, and I just want to set this up first, both of the brothers were created for this purpose.
Yes.
The purpose of, I guess, is finding Sugana's finger.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not. I don't know. But that was my understanding. They know the rules of how things should work. Like they were given a rundown of what was supposed to happen. They were supposed to come, get what they needed, and go. They weren't expecting any Jujutsu sorcerers. They weren't expecting anybody to be able to break outside of, you know, their powers because they're pretty darn strong. Like they have a physical body and their curses. Like this is pretty intense.
Right.
And like I said before, if you want to understand how their curses and have a physical body, essentially the small rundown is that they were born of a mortal woman and a curse. So they have the ability to have a humanoid body, but also have the powers of a curse. That is essentially how they hold best of both worlds.
Yes.
Yes.
Gross.
But an example of knowing the rules of how things should work, how these brothers thought the things were going to go down, is the example of Yuji and Nobara shouldn't be able to move while they are cursed by the brothers. They should be be paralyzed by the poison and so much in pain by the necrotic damage that's eating them up inside that they should not be able to move. But they are. They're able to move. And the brothers really, this is where like you start to see the brothers collapse in their understanding. Once Yuji and Nobara are able to move and be able to fight them, they realize that like their understanding isn't complete. And like, kind of like in basketball, when you have this really good defense and then all of a sudden like they break through it, you don't know what to do. You're like, should I do man to man? Should I be doing, like just area coverage, like it's what? Like, what do we do?
It's like they lack knowing how to improvise. It's like they have the one strategy,
exactly,
and it's helped them 99.5% of the time. But now we're in that 0.5% where they just are like, we don't know how to improvise. We don't know what to do. So
exactly. Yeah. Because of this, like they weren't planning on anything working outside of what they know.
Yep.
But because of that, they weren't expecting either one of the students to be able to attack, let alone be able to curse them back.
Right.
So the brothers believe that they shouldn't be killed because their mission was to get the finger, not to fight the students. And so like they come in feeling like they are invincible this entire time. And as soon as they were very, very prepped by Gato and Mahito on what they should be doing, how they should do it, and how to progress. Okay?
Yes.
I think we can see where Gojo's not explaining things fully can be a learning experience for these students and not get so pissed off, right?
Yes. This is the positive side to that really interesting teaching moment of his.
Yes. both students, so Yuji and Obara, both students don't know what to expect. Constantly, Gojo and the higher-ups throw them into situations that are out of their depths. Because of this, they often function outside of their abilities that they think that they can do. They push boundaries. They often try to improvise with what they can do. I mean, that's how Black Flash for Yuji kind of came up. If you remember, like, all of a sudden he just has, like, this glow of energy at different points before Toto, like, really helps him understand what that is. When they were cursed, so they were cursed by both of the brothers, necrotic type of curse and then like a poison type of curse, they didn't know that they shouldn't be able to move, so they continued to try to attack. They didn't know what the limitations should be when they are cursed with that type of curse. And right. So they're like, we're just going to continue on and do what we can. And they realize that they can. Yuji has this, maybe not like a conscious understanding, but he realizes that like the poison is not affecting him. And with Nobara, she realizes that because she has some of their blood inside of her body, that's part of the curse, that she can utilize that for her straw doll technique.
Yes. And I think that this is metaphorically what they're doing right now. Swinging for the home run, both of them. They're just like, the odds are, the ball is in either of our court. I'm mixing sport analogies, but you know, basically what they are doing is they are metaphorically swinging for that home run. Mm-hmm. It could stay in field. It might go over and they might win. Yeah. And that is something where, like Fushiguro, up until he had his breakthrough, he was giving the sacrificial bunt.
Yes.
But in this moment, and what we have seen steadily through these two, is that mm-hmm. they are just swinging that bat as hard as they can to get the home run. And this is where they improvise, where they don't know the limitations, but they just mm-hmm. believe, I'm mm-hmm. going to win. I'm going to beat these guys, or I'm going to make them suffer in the meantime. You know, they're great. Yeah. They're great.
Well, and I think what makes at least Nobara's abilities in this episode just even cooler, or even more swinging for the fences, if we're going to continue with that analogy, was that, like, she narrates when she realizes that she has their blood inside of her.
Yep.
That, like, with this cursed doll technique, blood doesn't really work very well for this technique, but because it's inside of her body, she can utilize her body also as kind of like a doll or a stand-in for the curse's bodies, because it's flowing within her veins at this point, trying to hurt her. And so, yet again, she has... This is where, like, she is different from the brothers, is because she has a knowledge of her limitations and what is okay and what will do well versus what won't do well. And she still tries it anyway. She's like, we're just going to try it. This is a theory that I have. Even though blood isn't great, it's still within my body. So, like, let's try to hurt myself to hurt them.
Yeah. But it pays off.
It does. And then Yuji continues to physically fight and protect, because that's literally all he can do. Like, he's just like, I have physical strength. I am going to use it. Neither one of them stops to think this over, like, thinks it over at all. They're just like, we just decide that we don't want to die.
Yeah,
that's what we have decided. That is the end goal, is to not die. So whatever I need to do, or whatever I lose so that I don't die, that's what I'm going to do. And that's the difference between the brothers. They don't have anything that is really motivating them. They have a goal of what they should be doing, but what is motivating them to complete that goal? It's not really their desire to complete this goal. It is Gato and Mahito's goal, or desire, to complete this goal. They are the ones that have something hinging on it. And with the brothers, it's like, well, if I have no purpose, I guess. After, when they realize that they're fighting these Jujutsu sorcerers instead of completing their task, they have no goal. They have nothing that is moving them forward. And they really, because, I mean, I call them the fetus brothers, but they're also young in infancy. They don't have a grasp or understanding of what life or death means because they've just been born. But also, are they born? They have this, like, existence that is so different than a curse or a human. They are in this in-between. So do they really understand who or what they are? And without being told exactly what to do, do they actually know how to function? And so we have just this difference between Yuji and Nobara and the brothers that I just think is very critical. Almost... We can talk about this outside because we've both grown up with the same beliefs. And I just had like this, two different plans were given. One that was, you will do everything by the book. And one was, you will have your agency. You can kind of like place it there a little bit.
We will have to talk about this. Okay. Yes. But I think just real quick, my thought, Nobara and Yuji are 100% human, very tied to their humanity, whereas these half situations, they and newer on the human side, but very much cocky, confident,
yes,
in their curse ability. Yes. I think that just blocks them from the humanity of trying hard, of it makes them overconfident, whereas with, I don't know. I'm rambling.
It's a lot, like, to try to understand, like, yeah. That's about as far as I can go in my understanding.
You know what? We'll Voxer about this, and we'll be like, what do you think? Let's dive back into this.
And then really quick, I wanted to, even though Megumi wasn't in the episode, I think that Megumi walks away with knowing that he can do a lot more than what he thought.
Yes.
Going past his breaking point allows him to live, allowed him to beat a special grade, which he previously had run from. Like, let's remember this. We have two special grades. The first one where they were going up against in the juvenile detention center. Megumi ran away from that one. And then we have one right now who is very similar, but just a little bit stronger, and he's standing his ground.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets a finger out of it. Like, he gets a Tsukuna's finger out of it.
Yeah.
He's able to join his friends knowing that his sister is safe and that from the curse at the bridge. He accomplished incredible things by himself. And if he leaves his mind out of it and doesn't overthink it, he just needs to be more greedy with his powers and, you know, really stretching his muscles.
Yeah.
But, and then Gojo at the end, this is just like trying to get him in on the episode as well. But his way of being plus ultra is that Gojo seems to have exhausted all of his efforts in gathering information, talking to Utahime, and just really trying to like just flesh it out on his own and with people who have similar mindsets to him. And so he tries to use Mei to see if she can gather information by paying her. So it's not necessarily his route that he would like to go, and it's outside of his comfort zone, but he goes beyond and tries to do it anyway because he's very dedicated to the cause.
Also, it's a massive amount. I was like, dang, Gojo. I want to know what your bank account looks like. Gosh.
Like, is this, I'm guessing this is personal money, by the way.
Well, true.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Oh, yeah. I love it. So good.
What would you like to share for the bonus section?
I really love seeing Nobara comfort Yuji. Yeah. It's like she could genuinely sense that he was upset, and they've both gone through this incredible fight between the two of them. And, but she's just like, hey, I noticed you're not talking that much. How are you feeling? You know? And it's just, it's so nice seeing how real the two of them, especially Nobra, have gotten with each other and how they are relying on each other, not just for the fighting, not just for being someone to save, but just being there for each other in the aftermath when the dust has settled and when feelings can start to brew up. You know, it's very sweet. Yes.
I thought so too. I think that this is more so on Nobara's part.
Yes.
A really big leap. And gesture.
Exactly. Because Yuji, you know, we've seen him get in his feelings and we can see that, you know, he can talk about it. But we don't really see a more softer side to Nobara. So I'm like, yeah, that's so sweet. I loved it.
Yeah. And I like that it's with Yuji because I think that Yuji has done a lot of effort for other people.
Yes.
Just like in kind of bridging that gap, because like he does it with Gojo. He does it with Nanami, where he has kind of like a heart to heart. He does it with the assistant, the black haired assistant. There are so many names that get thrown around.
Yeah.
So it's just like he really makes an effort all the time. And this is just, I think it's also what Yuji needed, you know, like he just came back from the dead, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And so he really hasn't had a ton of like bonding moments. And I think that this was really, really good. Okay. So for me, I just really liked how they styled the fight scene near the end with Yuji and Nobara's faces flipping back and forth between them and just seeing like the power emanate from just their profiles.
Yes.
So cool. Like it's one of those things where you're just like, oh man, like the cinematography of it, like essentially they're drawing panels that are very simple and like talking about, like I think that you've sent me a video in the past and it was an Attack on Titan one where they talk about like the simplest thing, but one of the most impactful things is like drawing somebody and then like a very blurry background because you're showing them in the moment and the power that is emanating from them. Mm-hmm. Like it's focused in on the person and what they can do. And just seeing that flipping back and forth between Yuji and Nobara, and it's not just Yuji. Like I want to make that clear. It's not just Yuji. They are showing that Nobara is in this moment doing just as much as Yuji is. And I love that. I think I just love the power play between the two, just going back and forth.
Right. And it makes it so special with the last episode with Fushiguro and him getting over the roadblock. And then equally Yuji and Nobara like being badasses equally of equal measure, you know, despite Yuji having Black Flash, and being Sukuna's vessel, Nobara is also shown the same weight. So it's like the three of them have gone just above and beyond and really like hit another level together, the same mission. So, it's so good.
And I think that it also shows like their synchronicity.
Yes.
The synchronicity between them. Mm-hmm. And of course, like, I think that if Megumi was there too, he'd be like kicking trash.
Totally.
He would be there too. And I just, I loved that that was just one other thing. Like, we weren't just power focusing on Yuji. Like, it's truly a group effort.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's move on to our favorite character or our favorite moment. Megan, why don't you go ahead?
I mean, we have given mixed signals about this character this episode.
It's hard not to. He's very polarizing.
He is. And I know that he personally would drive me crazy if he was my teacher, but I have to give it to Gojo this time. And he's not been a very active character. He's been passively helpful, but not actively in this situation. But I've got to give it to him because in these three episodes, we've learned that he saved Fushiguro from being sold to the Zenin clan, which the Zenin clan is also where Maki comes from. So double whammy there, giving you the middle finger, Zenin clan. But yeah, Gojo is solely responsible for stopping that sale of Fushiguro to the clan, just like how he had stopped Yuji's execution from the higher-ups in the beginning. It's like Gojo has truly, like, stuck his neck out for things that he feels are wrong and unjust, or just like, if there's any sort of close-mindedness of people in authority, he is willing to be an obstacle for them, which I admire that trait in in someone like Gojo. So had to give it up for that. And also, it was him and his talk with Fushiguro that actively prepared him to have the mental block break officially for him. So had to give it up to Gojo for his indirect profound work in these last three episodes.
There you go. No, I agree. And don't get me wrong, I know I've bashed Gojo a lot this episode, but
we love him.
My true love for him, because I'm willing to also criticize him.
You know, exactly. It's like, can we truly love the man if we also don't, you know, show we are aware of flaws?
Yes.
So there you go.
My favorite character was Nobara. Nobara. I say Nobara. I know you say Nobara. And I always get confused.
I think it's Nobara. I think you say it right. I just kind of muffle it because of an insecurity that I'm like, it's probably wrong. So I'm just going to like mumble it just to get through it faster. So there you go.
I want to say Megumi. I love Megumi. Like, I can't tell you, this time around, Touge has definitely, like, Touge was my first love of Jujutsu Kaisen. Like, I just thought that he, like, I don't usually like the characters that are in the forefront most of the time. So Touge was my favorite first. And then I really love Gojo, just because he's quirky and funny.
Right.
But Megumi, this time around, has really stood out to me because I feel like I very much resonate with his behavior, and his desires and the things that motivate him. And I really wanted to call him out as my favorite character, but I really, truly, truly feel that Nobara really showed a lot of growth in these past couple episodes.
Yes.
She has found her groove with the group. You know, at the beginning, she called out that they should be lucky that she's the girl of their group. But I also think that was just her trying to cover up her insecurities. I think that was her trying to put up a blustering front, because she's kind of a country bumpkin. She's a girl. She's not as well respected as somebody with more physical strength like Yuji, or somebody who comes from like a very powerful family, even though Megumi isn't like with
closely
his family
associated. He's
cousin
Zenin.
So I think that like she's really grown into being the person who she has put up a front to be, if that makes sense.
I love it. It 100% makes sense.
Every time she's knocked down, she finds a way back up. And I think that she gets knocked down a lot in comparison. And she's starting to thank people for their help, communicating better with others, and is really learning. And she's truly showing the vulnerability that she doesn't know everything, but is willing to work her hardest to keep up and outshine those who have seen her as less than. Like the brothers. That's my example for this trio of episodes, is that the brothers kind of treated her, like, especially that one fetus brother, like, said, "You're a woman, I'll let you go." And and it was kind of like looking down on her. And I think that she really tries to push past that and show her worth. And I think that she does a really good job of that.
Oh, so good. Yep. loved her in these episodes. And yeah, in the beginning of the season, I was so nervous for Nobara because of this cockiness level. I was like, the first time I watched it, I remember thinking like, please don't be like a Sakura from Naruto. Like, please, please don't. And but my husband and I talked about it. We're just like, Nobara is one of our favorite characters because she is just so strong in the kind of person that she is. She gets better, but she also holds her own, but she also grows as a person where she is more willing to just, for the things that you said, willing to receive help, willing to work with other people, and also just willing to check in on her friends like Yuji. It's just like she's become such a really great character from who she introduced herself as, how she postured herself as, to who she really is. So,
and she's still flawed. Like, she's still a flawed character. Exactly. But I think that she's being rounded out. Like, she's actually a character. We're not writing her off for her flaws, kind of like you said Sakura.
Sakura.
With her, it's kind of like, oh, she's the female, she's weak, we're gonna write her up, we'll give her an excuse. Like, we're not doing that in Jujutsu Kaisen. And it's, I love this in books. Characters have flaws, they grow from them, they build from them, and they become such a more deep character, and it's great.
Oh, me too. Yeah, oh my gosh, I cannot believe that we are done with season one of Jujutsu Kaisen. I think that that's a wrap. So everyone, thank you so much for joining us for our coverage on Jujutsu Kaisen. We are so happy that you joined us here at Little Bit Weebish. One last thing though, next week we are covering the Jujutsu Kaisen Zero movie. Yes, we are finally getting to it. And so yeah, be sure that next week you have watched the Jujutsu Kaisen Zero movie. Oh my goodness, there is a whole lot about that that's circulated. We'll probably address that next week's episode.
Yeah.
But yep, be sure to watch that. Thank you again. Again, if you have any thoughts, because we talked about a lot of things, feel free to send us an email at littlebitweebish@gmail.com or send us a DM on either Instagram or TikTok. Anything we talked about, I'd love to hear about it, talk to you about it. Let's do it. And yeah, thank you so much, everyone, and we will see you next week.
Bye.